is designed for Living Talk Radio Show on the amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. AWPTalk247.com, where you can listen while you work. We have registered nurse, marriage and family therapist, master life coach, and author, Michelle Downey.
Well, today is a new year and a new month and a brand new page on a new chapter of our book of life. I'd like to start off with what I consider some practices that are pretty basic, but very few people actually do them. These practices are not that difficult, but I think that the discipline to do them is what's unusual. If people can actually do these consistently for at least 30 days, a habit can be formed. And these kind of habits can be kept up for a lifetime. And it actually helps people consistently for the rest of their lives. It benefits the families, it benefits those around them, because everyone around them will notice.
Oh, good. So, Michelle, what kind of practice are you talking about?
Well, there's about five practices I would recommend that people follow. Sometimes people have different names for them, but let's start with the most important one. That one is prayer and meditation. They say the first thing, if you do it in the morning, it sets the tone for the entire day. And what we have is a series of day-type compartments that we live in called the present. What we do with today has everything to do with the quality of life we want for our future. Because as they say, our future hasn't happened yet, the past is over with, and that's why they say it is our present to stay in the moment. Psychologists are now excited because they are using techniques that have been used for centuries called mindfulness. But the nuns and monks in both Eastern and Western religions have used these techniques forever. Sometimes I think we're so slow in discovering the things that really matter in Western civilization. But at least they're starting to see that spirituality and science aren't really divorced, and you can't divide up the human being into parts like physical, mental, spiritual. We have to address the whole person, which includes all these things. Anyway, let's talk about the prayer and meditation first.
Okay, so if we talk about meditation and everything right now, should I get, or everyone should get into a meditation position right now so we can listen to you while you talk?
You're so funny. No, actually, there's no position you have to take.
Okay, all right, because it's kind of cramped where I'm sitting right now.
You can just be relaxed wherever
okay.
You are.
All right.
I mean, I may suggest something later, but right now you can just get all relaxed.
Okay, I'll do that.
So they say, prayer is like a telephone. You're asking God or the higher power for connection. Meditation is like receiving the message. Some people think prayer consists of saying a bunch of rote words and going to church. But I think it's a lot more. The important thing about prayer is that it changes us, not that we can change God. Another way to look at it is that we're just hooking up the electricity so the light bulb will work and we can have some light. The power source is the electricity and not the bulb. But when it's hooked up, we don't even have to understand or believe that electricity works or that it exists. It still works every time when we are plugged in. So meditation can be something that we study, you know, so we can become better at it if you want. But it's basically a technique that calms the mind down so it can focus. Our minds are like monkeys, always chattering. So when we start the techniques of some of the kinds of meditation, it may seem like 10 minutes of stillness and focus is torture. I tell people to imagine that their mind is the sky, and whatever comes across the sky, like a flock of geese, we simply acknowledge that thought, and then we refocus on whatever we're trying to focus on. Some meditations, like, give you a mantra, or you can take a word or two that inspires you or calms you, like, peace, be still, or Father, reveal yourself to me, or the name of God. For some people, it can be just saying Jesus over and over. But the idea is that you're focusing on something spiritual or some aspect of the higher power to calm you down. This practice, if it's done every day, can actually be worked up to 30 minutes. But I would just try 5 to 10 minutes first. And I use a timer. I used a kitchen timer at first, and I went into the bathroom where I had a fan. That way nothing would distract me, like the phone or the door or people. My child was little at that time, so I would give her something to do for that time. Maybe it would be to eat her cereal or watch TV, and then I would give it a shot. It was very challenging for me at first because I have a monkey mind. I was always thinking of something. It's very common to think about everything on my to-do list that I needed to do right then. Or like my nose would start to itch, or, you know, I would have this scratch. Anyway, my mind would remember something somebody said, and I was off on a story. So I would just try not to get upset and gently bring my mind back to the original words that I had chosen. And, you know, I thought I'd give it a try. And eventually, you know, with a lot of practice, I was able to work up to 15 minutes. But in the beginning, it was just like 5 and then 10. Some people try to look at something beautiful, like a flower or a piece of fruit, and they try really to focus on the aspect of that object, first in the real world and then in their mind. Like they try to visualize every detail of what it looks like, smells like, and then they close their eyes without peeking and then try to imagine. That would be a mental challenge for me as well. But anyway, you know, there's different kinds of people and different ways to do it. There's some people that have to, you know, do what you were talking about, sit in a certain, you know, there's lotus meditational where you can sit in a certain way. Most people, when they meditate, generally suggest that you just use your spine, keep it straight, sit up so you don't fall asleep. And, you know, you can just sit in a chair, have your feet on the ground, and just hold your hands in your lap. And just close your eye. And some people say to focus on the third eye, which is the point between your eyebrows, because that helps with your focus, if you can close your eyes and do that. But there's different ways to do it. Some people have to have someone talking to them while they're listening to soft music. And we can, you know, we generally call that guided visualization. And we, you know, talk about things like protection or safety or love or peace.
Okay. So what is the mindfulness you're speaking of?
Okay. Well, the mindfulness is the practice of being mindful or thoughtful of whatever it is you're doing at the present time, in the present moment. But, you know, like when you paint, you're completely immersed in your painting. Time doesn't really have a function. You don't know what time it is. It's because you're so immersed in what you're doing. That's mindfulness. When I walk, instead of automatically walking like I always do, to walk mindfully, I would focus on my breath, my footsteps, my rhythm to the walk. I would focus my mind on the present moment, no matter what it was I was doing. This is what the monks and priests do as a form of prayer. That way, you're constantly aware of this moment, and it seems to stretch out time. It's really cool, and it's really hard at first. But if you keep it up and don't get discouraged, eventually your brain cells and brain pathways will connect, and it'll become easier and easier to do. Your brain is made up of thinking pathways that usually, you know, you go over and over again. But if you want to do something new and it isn't the same, you have to actually grow new neurons and dendrites in your brain, new thinking pathways. But once it's in your brain, it's like riding a bike. You automatically get there.
So what do you recommend for people starting off the New Year's with some of these practices?
Well, I recommend the first thing in the morning is you pick something that it won't even take 15 minutes. Usually I recommend that you read a page from some kind of inspirational book and then maybe try to meditate on that page. You can try some of these techniques. And then whatever, you know, you're doing the rest of the day, try to think whatever it is you're doing. Try to do it mindfully. It'll slow down time. Most people do things automatically, so this will actually be difficult at first, but it will help with growing these new thinking pathways. And then I recommend trying to expand the time for prayer and meditation to 2 times a day, morning and night. Right before going to bed, I recommend the same thing with the prayer and meditation. Another practice which will really do you a world of good is to have what we call a gratitude list. Even if your prayers consist of thanking God or higher power for all the good things in your life, that would be awesome. Like when you were little, some kids were taught to pray, you know, like for their mom and dad and other people, and then list the things they were grateful for. Like before eating, we thank God for our food. And when we grew up, we like let go of simple things because I think we needed to let go of what we thought were childish things. But actually, it's an excellent practice for life. We just need to update it. And for people that didn't get that kind of instruction or help when they were little, well, then they're usually more open to this because to them it's brand new. You don't even have to believe there's a higher power, God. You just have to be willing and do it. It works like the electricity and the light bulb. That way we don't have to get into all the beliefs and religious stuff that seem to divide people. I like the way the 12 steps approach the issue. They say you just need a higher power you can do business with, one that has some power. Because with the Alcoholics Anonymous people, you know, they know alcohol has them beat. They know they're powerless over that. But with the higher power and some help and basic, instruction, all people of all races and creeds can get sober. And that's one organization that defies the odds. That's a group of people so diverse and so different, and they can gather together and still accomplish together what they hadn't been able to do alone. It's amazing. It's something no organized religion has ever been able to do, that's for sure.
Okay, so when a person feels like they're weak and they can't control themselves, they should go back to that practice that you mentioned earlier?
The mindfulness.
The
meditation.
Mindfulness. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a good thing, you know, you keep me on track here. I could get lost in my stories.
So it's like 15 minutes in the a.m. and the p.m. you pray, meditate, and gratitude list, right? And use the gratitude list.
That's right. You've got it. It's really simple. I make it complicated, but it's actually simple. Oh, one thing about the gratitude list. I suggest people write it down, like an A to Z gratitude list. If you can do it in a journal before you go to bed at night, it works best. It's a way of releasing the cares of the day and focusing on all the things you do have instead of what you don't have and what you're worried about. Lots of people have insomnia and sleeping problems, and they have poor hygiene in areas like this.
Oh,
poor
sleeping hygiene. Wow. So sleeping hygiene, what is this? I never heard of a sleeping hygiene.
Well, you know, dental hygiene. Like
yeah.
So I just called it sleep hygiene. It's just healthy ways to get sleep.
Oh, it's like a mind floss.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's a mind floss. That's a very good analogy, Bob. Very good.
Okay.
Okay. Well, in my line of work, because most of my clients have depression, mental illness, addiction problems, or they have problems with someone who has these issues, sleep is always at the top of the list for what they describe as problems. Sure, medicine is sometimes prescribed to get the sleep cycle back in severe cases, but actually most of my job is working with a psychiatrist with these people. It's to help them get the basics down. When I worked in the hospital as a nurse, we actually reset people's body cycles when they were admitted to the treatment center, rehab, or the psych unit. Everyone has a natural rhythm to their bodies called the circadian rhythm or an internal clock. I think of the root of the word comes from the Latin word circadian, which means around. Chronobiology is a formal study of biological temporal rhythms, such as daily, tidal, weekly, seasonal, and annual rhythms. And like light resets the biological clock, some animals have to reset their clocks due to the amount of light. And light, and we call them nocturnal, you know. But anyway, every 24 hours, we do have an internal clock. Like some people are owls and some people are morning birds. You know, some people are just naturally better in the morning and some people aren't. So anyway, what we would do when we hospitalized people was we reset these internal clocks by having them stay in the hospital for about 30 days. And they followed whatever the hospital schedule was. And that was a very strict schedule. Everyone gets up at 7. If they want breakfast at 7:30. Lunch is served at noon. Dinner served at 5. In other words, regular. It doesn't vary. And then they go to sleep at 9:30 because the lights are out at 10. And these are examples. But, you know, once the eating habits and sleeping habits are normalized, you know, like nobody gets to sleep during the day and nobody eats whenever they want to, you know, the body is like a little child. It adjusts. You ever notice a kid that has a schedule? Usually a lot happier than a kid whose parents have no schedule for them. And then they're acting out, they're irritable. And it's because the parents didn't know to give the kid a schedule. It's the same thing in school. There's routines that kids know and they can depend on and they can predict. Anyway, that's a short summary of the reason that good sleep hygiene is necessary. Another thing is like never having the TV or radio, iPad, iPhone in the bedroom, having a set schedule for when you go to sleep and wake up, having a ritual to get ready for bed to sleep, like a warm bath or soft music or reading a book. But the book can't be too exciting. The way I got my daughter to sleep was I gave her a book, because otherwise she would fuss when it was her bedtime. But she would read, and then I would come back in, and she would be asleep with the book in her hand. I would sneak in and turn off the light. So that's the way I got her to bed.
Okay. So what other practices are you suggesting for people to do?
Okay, so I said there's about 5 of them. Well, obviously the exercise and movement is huge for everybody. And the nutrition. We are a nation of people who are obese. Partly that is because the nutrition's been slowly eroding and our work schedules make it easier to get fast food. And then the erosion of the mom being at home making the meals, you know, we don't have that luxury these days, most people. Everyone's doing their schoolwork or their work schedules leads to eating on the fly, and that's not good. It definitely needs to be looked at. You know, there's a lot of good research on why sugar is not a good thing to have. I remember when I was a nurse, I had a young researcher who was my boss. He was a psychologist in a program called Oak Knoll Children's Center. These were for kids between the ages of 6 and 12 who didn't fit into the normal school. Today, we would call them special needs. But back then, we put them into a separate school. These would be kids with severe mental problems, or back then, we would call it hyperactivity. And, you know, they would act out. Some of them would try to hurt themselves or throw things or try to hurt other people. But anyway, the psychologist had done his master's on eliminating sugar from hyperactive kids' diets. It was an absolutely novel approach. He got a lot of grief for it. People gave him a hard time. I think he eventually got fired or let go, or they closed down the center. But he was way ahead of his time. The kids got better when they were off sugar. But it was such a foreign concept. You know, I thought nothing of taking the kids out for an ice cream cone. Boy, did I catch it from him. I wasn't thinking. But now, of course, we know. The kids today have brains that can't handle that sugar. And there's pretty much sugar in everything. You have to be diligent. But you can get a great nutritious food plan without including things like sugar or flour or wheat. There's a woman named Kay Shepherd who wrote a book called Food Addiction, The Body Knows, on her website, which is www.kshepherd.com. She gives recipes and why it's dangerous for some people to have these items other than, you know, they have an allergy to them. Anyway, It can be done. Good nutrition with a little planning and education. Certainly people can eat better. There's a lot written about that. You know, like eating 3 meals a day, no grazing. And again, you know, making sure the body has that structure. So now the exercise and movement issue is a huge one. They say to do at least 20 minutes, at least 4 times a week. So you sweat. That's a good way to look at exercise. I myself have more fun when I do dancing and yoga, but some people prefer weights and workouts, running or bicycling or whatever works. Some people in groups, some not. Some walking every day. My grandpa lived to be 101. And he said the secret to his longevity is he walked every day. And he lived in Omaha, Nebraska. It wasn't always fair weather there. But I know he walked every day. I think it was his prayer and meditation time as I look back. But all I remember is that he did this. And he loved his game of golf. Those were the things I remember. So I say start easy with a goal that's achievable, and then increase it once, you know, that achieved goal has been accomplished, and get an accountability partner. Find someone who will hold you to what you say your plan is and will encourage you. You know, sometimes anything can throw me off, like getting sick. So I just have to begin again whenever I can. Sometimes I'm like a kid, I'm rebellious. I don't want to. But eventually I do it because I have a team of supporters. For me, in the belly dance and dancing community, there's always someone who will want me to show up or invite me to do something. And, of course, my class is where I meet my friends. I do better with people. Bob, remember when we took the Tai Chi course for a while? It was fun and easy. It didn't take a lot of work, but it was a discipline. If it was something I kept up, I think it would be part of my practice. But I'd have to take the class again to remember what I learned.
Yeah, I remember that Tai Chi class. I felt like a giant praying mantis moving in slow motion. And inside me telling me, you're a Tasmanian devil. You can't stay like this. But I controlled myself. I had to. I couldn't jump all around in that class. Well, they're thinking I'm a nut. But it was a very soothing, relaxing point to meditate and move slowly.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you didn't have to be in any position to meditate. It was a movement meditation.
Yeah, slow
and you're right.
Movement.
You did it very well, I think.
Yeah, I thought I did pretty
anyway, good. Yes, you did. You did very well.
Right.
I thought you were one of the better ones anyway.
Really? Well, it must have been the martial art classes I took when I was a younger kid.
Yeah, that probably was it, because you certainly had some of the moves down. Well, these are some of the things, you know, everyone wants to do, you know, because they get inspired. You know, I think getting inspired at this time, it's great to get inspired and to make some kind of resolution. Some people say they never make resolutions because they're going to break them anyway. But I say it's better to come up with some things. Don't ever give up on bettering yourself.
Okay, so... I agree with that. Don't ever give up bettering yourself. One should never do that. But so what other ideas, since we have a few minutes left, do you have that you like to say?
Well, I tell people to do something that's creative and inspirational, something that they have a passion for. Like, I'm working on a book about fairies. And, Bob, you're going to illustrate that book for me, right?
That's right. I'm going to illustrate that book for you.
Good.
Yes, there's agreement. I committed myself to doing it, and I will do it. It's a practice. I made a promise, and I'm going to keep it. Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay.
Anyway, you paint for a living and for inspiration. I need to interview sometime because you've been painting all of your life, and you just get better. Recently, you had to have a huge life change when your partner passed away, Steve Kaufman. And you need to create some new lines of art. Now, that's what I call passion. And certainly, if anybody looks at your work, they can see. I want people to create and do what inspires them. A passion could be a hobby. It could be anything they're eager to do, enthusiastic. Some people say they don't have time or they've got too much to do. But I say if all you have are your to-do lists done by the end of your life, who cares what was on that to-do list. You didn't live. You know, one of my mentors is Brendan Burchard. He's everywhere on the web, YouTube, podcasting, you know, New York Times bestseller, founder of the Experts Academy, which, by the way, I attended this year in September. It was a high point for me. There were 800 people from all over the world, and they were all people who wanted to work on some aspect of changing the world for the better with their entrepreneurial work. I was in the minority being from the United States. To actually experience this was amazing. He's very inspirational, but he's very practical. He's very real. And, you know, what I realized is we really are a global world. It used to be a big deal to travel abroad. My dad was in the Air Force, so I always felt privileged to be able to live in a foreign country. We lived in Scotland at that time for part of one of his stays. I realized how lucky I was. I was able to understand the culture and the customs. And, you know, we were actually very affluent as he was a captain in the Air Force. And Scotland was actually a poor country at that time. And I just never realized, you know, how lucky I was. My parents always taught me that, you know, we have many privileges that a lot of people do not have. Certainly, I didn't realize it had I not lived there. Then when I was in high school, I had a pen pal who was in the Philippines. I was so excited to get her mail. I learned a lot about her. And I also knew a girl from Lebanon who was my pen pal. I learned a lot about her customs. So today, my daughter and her husband, who are like in their 30s, think nothing of going abroad. True, it's for their work, but they've been everywhere. It was many years before I got to go to France and Greece, which were dreams of mine. I went as a teacher's helper with a French high school gifted program of students. So I've learned so much from those two trips. But anyway, that's another story. But today we're able to influence people all over the world. This broadcast is one of those ways. It's amazing that what we speak about, that somebody even in another state might hear, much less in another country. I'm always amazed and humbled by the changes that have taken place in my lifetime. I think this internet has brought the world together. I think it's overall a really great thing. So with that, I think, Bob, that this is my New Year's focus. I hope some of the listeners will be able to participate in trying a couple of the practices. And thank you very much.
Until then, let life be well and good.